from the Star Rentals Sports Desk. Your Sports Radio KJR 950 AM and 93.3 FM Sports Headlines.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. 5 o'clock on a beautiful Tuesday night right here on Softy and Dick on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM. Headlines are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Well, that's Jerry's plan. Let's just get middle relievers. Middle relievers, that's going to win the championship.
Is he a DePaisel?
I don't think he's all the way there yet. We'll ask him when he comes on at 5:30. Yeah. Hey, Jackson, be sure and text Chuck. Remind him about 5:30. Jackson, over here. 5:30, Chuck Powell, text him. You got it? Good. Anyway, the NFL has made a change to the overtime rules, but only for the playoffs. Each team is guaranteed at least one possession. If the game is tied after the first possession, sudden death will ensue. Ravens head coach John Harbaugh also getting a new three-year extension today through 2025.
Cowboys expect to be without wide receiver Michael Gallup for the first few weeks of the regular season after tearing his ACL in Week 17. And Tiger Woods seen practicing at Augusta National today, testing it out if he can walk the course without pain.
I still say one play.
I lean towards you. I hope we're wrong, but I lean towards you.
NHL Kraken get it done last night. A season second highest, how do you say it, second highest output of the year. Goal scoring wise, second highest goal output of the year, six goals.
How about second highest scoring game of the year?
Second highest scoring game of the year by the Kraken. 6-1 over the Kings last night. They had 7 against the Sabres back in November. The guys have the night off tonight. They got Vegas tomorrow and Friday at Climate Pledge Arena.
The Cougs facing Texas A&M tonight at 6:30 in the NIT Final Four from Madison Square Garden.
Who are you rooting for in that game?
I don't care. I don't think if the Cougs win.
I'm kind of with you.
Game. Who cares?
I don't give a damn either. Although if they win it, they're going to act like they won the Super Bowl. You know that. If the Cougars win the NIT, they're going to act like they won the NBA championship. Mariners, they should for that, but still. The Suarez-Winker deal has been closed. Connor Phillips, the 15th-rated prospect by Keith Law, is now the official player to be named later in the deal, and the Saints have signed Andy Dalton to a one-year deal with $3 million guaranteed.
It's time for our weekly Pac-12 conversation with San Jose Mercury News reporter John Wilner. Brought to you by Simply Seattle. Our friends at SimplySeattle.com have the most amazing collection of all things Seattle. Seahawks gear, UW hats, and the largest selection of Sonics gear anywhere in the world. Learn more at SimplySeattle.com.
I'm going to show you a picture. Okay. I want you to tell me the name of the player that pops into your head when you see that first. First player.
David Wingate.
That's one of the guys I said. Percy Hawkins and David Wingate.
Because those are the guys, David Wingate was always wearing that because he never got into the game.
Right. Steve Scheffler, they were on the sideline wearing that 96 authentic warm-up jacket. It's got the red, it's got the green, it's got the yellow, just like they wore the year they went to the NBA Finals. If you or somebody you love would like a 96 authentic Sonic warm-up jacket as worn by David Wingate, SimplySeattle.com has them for sale right now on the website. Be sure and use code SOFTY10 at checkout for a discount. Here he is, a man who needs no discount. He gets everything for free, baby, red carpet included. Our friend Johnny Wilner. John, how are you, man? What's going on?
Well, there's some news, actually, today. Yeah.
There is news, and apparently it's a big deal. At first, when I saw it, I was like, whatever, who cares? But then I thought about it, and I read other people's reactions, and it is a big deal. Tell people what the Pac-12 did today and why it's a big deal.
Well, the Pac-12 announced that it's moving the conference office out of San Francisco. It'll no longer be based there. And, in fact, there will be no new conference office. It's going fully remote. So, you know, an office in the traditional sense is not going to happen. People can live anywhere in the Mountain or Pacific time zone if you work for the conference. And they are going to just have some kind of small production facility for Pac-12 networks, and that could be in the Bay Area. I don't know where it'll be, but they're going to go from $8 million a year in rent in this swanky downtown San Francisco facility to everybody working from home, basically.
Wow. So does that mean that Kalen DeBoer can call plays from Fresno? I mean, he works for the Pac-12, right? He can work from home? No? No?
Sure. I'm sure every opponents would love that.
Gotcha.
But no, you know, it's a big deal because that's a lot of money. You know, let's say they got to spend $1 million a year for the production facility. That's $7 million in savings, and that money's going to the schools. So So that's, you know, anywhere from $500,000 to $750,000 going to the schools that they didn't get. And that's, you know, that's a couple of football assistant coaches' salaries.
Are they traveling their television folks to call games, or are they all doing those in their local markets as well in a studio?
They are doing everything they can to save money. There are some instances where, you know, they are going play. I mean, Bill Walton's going to Oregon for you know, UCLA, Oregon, whatever. And the football broadcast crews are in the stadiums. But where they can save money, either having games called from home, you know, the broadcast crews at home, or just using local based announcers, they are doing everything they can these days to save every penny.
Yeah. Well, what kind of actual tangible impact is this going to have on my favorite football team? Because that's what everybody around the conference is asking, right? Like, I'm not just asking that as Softy the Husky fan or Dick the Husky fan or Puckett the Cougar fan. I mean, all of us that are fans of these teams want to know, okay, you're saving money. There's no office. You can work remotely. You're not calling games from the arena. You're calling games from a studio. How is this going to make me and my team better?
Well, it depends on the school. I mean, if that's it's $500,000 a year that all of a sudden the school's getting, that's up to them how they're going to allocate it. Is that going to go to support Olympic sports? Is it going to go for basketball? Is it going to go for football? I mean, if it's going for football, it's an assistant position. It's a coordinator position for some people. It's a recruiting budget for a year. It pays for an FCS opponent to come to your stadium. So it's real money if the schools want to reinvest it in football. That's the big question.
A disappointing finish for both Arizona and UCLA. Give us kind of your 10,000-foot state of Pac-12 men's basketball right now, and are those two programs here to stay?
I think they're here to stay. So my 10,000-foot view is that you can kind of see two pictures depending on what window you want to look out of, right? I mean, it was not a great season, only three tournament bids, and then nobody got out of the Sweet 16. Arizona lost, you know, as a 1 seed to a 5 seed. UCLA lost as a 4 to an 8. So in that regard, it was a little bit unsatisfying, I would say. But the fact that Arizona and UCLA both have first-rate coaches, I think that those two programs are in good shape going forward. And in that regard, I think the conference is in, you know, as strong a position as it's been in a while. It has to have Arizona and UCLA good on a regular basis, and it looks like both programs will be.
Well, let me ask you about the Cougs a little bit here, John, because they're in the NIT against A&M tonight, and all you hear is things like, well, if they do well, or this should really bode well for them for next year. And I don't know. I remember doing this exercise when the Huskies went to the Final Four. I think they played like Minnesota, Dick, or something like that back in the
day, right,
at MSG. And
yeah,
I looked up how teams did, and it really was kind of a nothing burger as far as how teams did the next year, you know, because they went to the NIT. So I don't know. I mean, you tell me. I mean, how big a deal is this for Kyle Smith and that Cougar program moving forward to be in the Final Four of the NIT?
Well, I did look up how NIT winners have done the following year. And in the last decade, I found four instances. And that's, you know, there was no NIT in 2020.
Right.
So, you know, there were four instances where the team that won the NIT made the NCAA the next year. And in the case of Wichita State and Baylor, NIT title launched, you know, a long stretch of NCAA bids. So it really helped catapult those programs. Doesn't mean it's going to happen for Washington State, but it is a whole bunch of extra games, a bunch of extra practice time. And I think it does put the Cougars in a better position to succeed early next season. They're going to be further ahead. I mean, it's like when you have bowl practices, except I think it's probably a much bigger bump.
And, John, how about the long-term outlook? Because we're McDonald's All-American night, right? We've got the girls playing right now. We got the boys playing after this. And the Pac-12, I mean, four McDonald's All-Americans going to Pac-12 boys schools, 11 girls going to the Pac-12. So that bodes pretty well for the distance future as well.
It does. I mean, I think, you know, even though the Pac-12 women didn't have a great tournament by their standards, you know, that's been a high-quality operation for many years. On the men's side, you know, there have been plenty of McDonald's All-Americans going to the Pac-12 the last couple of years. I mean, Washington got two of them, right? Weren't Stewart and Daniels
Jaden.
Both?
Yeah,
Jay McDaniels.
They were both, yeah. So I don't know that high-end talent hasn't been that big a problem for the Pac-12 lately, right? I mean, Evan Mobley, there's lots of cases. To me, it's what happens once those guys get on their campuses. And, you know, are they developed? Do they stay long enough to develop? And or do they make a big impact in their first year? It's not getting the McDonald's All-Americans. It's what the conference is doing with them that I think is the bigger issue.
Well, to your point, John, Jackson Grant was a McDonald's All-American. The dude barely saw time this year with a team that didn't even make the NCAA tournament.
Right.
I know, and there's plenty of other examples of that, and there's a real philosophical issue for the Pac-12 in terms of how each school should be recruiting in the current environment with one and dones, with the transfer portal, with all of this turnover. You really got to think about how you want to build your roster, and I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, at least providing enough guys on your roster that you are confident are going to stick around for 3-4 years that can form the core of your rotation.
Well, John Wilner with us, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com. Josh Connerly Jr., who is the 5-star offensive tackle from Rainier Beach, is that right?
Yes.
Is going to announce his commitment on the 8th of April. And, I mean, look, barring a last-second surprise, he's not going to UW, right? I mean, there's people saying now it's going to be USC, with Oregon maybe finishing second. And I don't know, for lack of a better term, how irritated should Husky fans be that this guy's taken off and leaving? This is another big-time offensive line prospect, going back to guys like David DeCastro, Zach Banner, Josh Garnett, that all left town and went somewhere else if this guy leaves.
Yeah, I mean, and it's happening not just at offensive line, too, right? I think that, you know, the Husky fans should be wondering if I think this is probably rooted in name, image, likeness opportunities, and USC is really being aggressive with that. I think Husky fans probably should be wondering, you know, to what extent is Montlake, Montlake Futures?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, what impact is that actually having on recruiting? You know, I think that is kind of a TBD situation. And if you compare it to some of the other places, I'm not sure that they are quite up to speed with some of their competitors.
Well, the other thing is that USC, and this wouldn't affect Connerly because he's committing on the 8th, but their spring game, apparently I heard Canzano today talking to Puck and Moore about this. Their spring game is on April 23rd. It's going to be on ESPN. And apparently USC's spring game is the only live spring game that's going to be airing on ESPN this cycle, with Herb Street and Galloway and Molly McGrath. And
the only reason is Lincoln Riley,
well,
too.
Sure.
If they hadn't gotten Lincoln Riley,
right,
they wouldn't air that one.
But everybody else is stuck on the Pac-12 with a couple of yahoos doing the broadcast from some closet somewhere. I mean, look, it's great for the Pac-12 that USC is getting all this pub, but is it great for the other 11 schools to just play second fiddle?
I think it is good that if USC is getting a lot of pub, I think that there is the indirect benefits on that, right? If USC is really good at that, helps everybody else. Now, it's not on a day-to-day basis or Saturday-to-Saturday basis, but it helps everybody when SC is, you know, getting a lot of attention and is backing it up with its play on the field. I mean, if they fall on their face next season, a lot of this attention is going to fizzle. But right now, I mean, you know, they spent a lot of money. It does show you about return on investment. They spent $100 million, basically, on Lincoln Riley, and then they got Caleb Williams because of it, and now they're getting a lot of benefits.
Do we have a former SC quarterback coming back to the Pac-12? Is JT Daniels going to go play for Jonathan Smith?
You know, I'm not sure. He might. I think that he's looking. I want to say it's Missouri and Virginia Tech, but don't hold me to those names. But the Beavers are in the bottom, the final three or four for Daniels. It would certainly be interesting. I mean, I'm not convinced he would necessarily beat out, you know, Jebbia and Chance Nolan. We'll have to see. He's had some injury issues, but it would certainly make situation, you know, a lot more intriguing, and it would bring some attention to the Beavers. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. All right, man. Listen, great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll see what happens with all that cash getting thrown UW's way and how they spend it now. The conference. Was there a lease up on that building, by the way?
It's up next year.
Gotcha. All right. Listen, good stuff, man. Appreciate this, and we'll talk in a week, pal.
Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You bet. John Wilner with us, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com. And I don't know, man. I'm conflicted. I'll be totally honest with you. With this USC thing. Because, look, on one hand, it's good for the conference to get somebody to get exposure, right? I mean, you know, what's the thing about boats and tides?
Absolutely.
And all
lifts
that
all
stuff?
Boats.
Yeah, but then you got the number one recruit in the state that's leaving you in the dust and going to play for him. So, like, what am I supposed to do? Throw a party?
No, but it's...
USC is getting all this love, and Josh Connerly Jr. is not going to UW. I mean, I'm not saying that UW would have been in position to get him anyway. He may have gone somewhere else to begin with, but I just this whole thing just stinks. It stinks that we have to sit here and say, well, it's so great for the Pac-12 that USC is getting all this attention. And you know why you have to say that? Because the conference sucks. That's why you have to say that. So can we not suck as a conference so we can stop sitting around and kissing USC's ass just to save our own backside?
Well, yes, but the first step of not sucking as a conference is having USC being a top five program.
And I hate it.
What do you want? Do you want a good conference, or do you want to be the kings of a crap conference?
I don't want to be in this position, and it pisses me off that we're here.
Okay, so tell
me, the point.
What position do you want to be in?
What are you, crazy?
I just told you.
What do you mean, what position do I
want to be in? What position do you want to be? Do you honestly think that the Washington Husky football program is going to eclipse USC and be perennially the best program in the country? Okay, so
I don't think that.
So what do you want?
I don't know how else to do it besides write it down for you. They should not be losing their best recruits to USC.
But if that's the only school they're losing to, that's not a problem, because it wasn't a problem 40 years ago under Don James.
Okay,
they lost guys to USC.
This isn't 40 years ago. They've been losing offensive linemen up and down the West Coast for a decade. These guys have to stay home. I'm the guy that's on the air telling you, if you're going to win a championship, you have to fix the trenches. The best way to fix the trenches is to get your best in-state offensive and defensive line talent to stay in Seattle. You want to take that tack, take it. Fine.
No.
Whatever. I'm telling you, I'm sick and tired of losing these offensive linemen. I'm tired of losing these big-name, five-star, NFL-caliber, NFL-ready offensive linemen to other schools. It's irritating the hell out of me.
Okay, other schools is not USC.
USC. Okay. We lost a guy to Stanford.
Lost a guy to Stanford because he wanted to be a doctor. Okay,
then it's all fine. Then it's all good then.
To me, there is no problem for an academic guy like Josh Garnett to want to go to Stanford. There is no problem for a five-star guy to want to go to USC. Now, if they want to go to Oregon instead of Washington, that's a problem.
I think you're missing the point entirely, because they're not...
That's my opinion.
Well, of course, but I think that you're missing why those guys are doing that. If Washington was any good, there would be a much bigger pull for those guys
to stay home. But
every
Lincoln
single,
Riley's still at USC.
You know what? And guess what? If Washington was 11-1 the year before, maybe there's a chance at fighting them off.
Maybe.
That's the whole point. You want to sit here and say that, okay, I'm not fine with Josh Garnett going to Stanford because the guy wants to be a doctor. I'm fine from his perspective. He can do whatever the hell he wants. He's a young kid. He should pick whatever path he wants to pick. But can we get in the fight? Can we be in the conversation? Can we get in the argument? Can we give the kid even a reason to even remotely think about staying home and not going to Stanford? And that's the issue. That's the problem that we are dealing with, is that it's the chicken before the egg. You need those guys to get good, but you can't get good without them, and they won't stay until you get good. So look, from their perspective, totally agree. Great, good for you, congratulations. But man, it'd be nice for UW to put up a freaking fight and give these guys a reason to stay home. And they haven't been doing that long enough. We'll get a break. 520, Chuck Powell. We'll talk some baseball with Chuck. Find out about the big news of the day down there in Peoria. Recap his show. Had a bunch of big names on again this morning. Coming up next, right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
We're Seattle's only FM sports station. Set your preset and switch to 93.3 FM on your radio. Now, back to Softy and Dick.
I asked him, I was like, hey, Bone, let me take you out for dinner for your birthday. He told me no. he said, go have dinner with your wife. I said, I have dinner with her every night. Like, let me take you out. It's your 70th birthday. He said, I'm going to go to the game, go drive through Chick-fil-A, get some soup, and go home. I said,
who gets soup at Chick-fil-A?
That's what I'm saying. So the day of his birthday, I swung through Chick-fil-A drive through in the morning and got him a gift card. And he went all out. He got a sandwich, soup, a brownie. Like, he went all out.
Jeez, that's Ty France talking about taking Perry Hill out for his 70th birthday. You should have asked him, did he take his teeth out when he took him to Chick-fil-A as well before he had his chicken noodle soup, for crying out loud?
I'm just enjoying Jackson's choice of bumper music here, the greatest baseball bumper music of all time.
CBS's baseball?
Absolutely.
I still prefer Baseball Tonight, the old classic, the original on ESPN.
Get it tomorrow.
Yeah, the gathering crowds, the ending of This Week in Baseball that you played yesterday was pretty good, too. So
let's ask Chuck. He's the expert.
9 days from today is the opener against Minnesota.
Yeah, right?
Nine more days.
Nine times.
Chuck, what's your favorite baseball theme song of all time? You have one?
This Week in Baseball. Week in Baseball, without a doubt.
All right.
Bam, bam.
But what you are describing, though, is really the game show theme Jackpot, which came out, I believe, in the 1960s.
Really?
Did you know that?
No, I did not know that, and I kind of want to slap your mouth for ruining that for me.
It's very true. They ripped it off from a game show called Jackpot back in the day.
They.
Oh, my
Do I know something about baseball that you don't know?
Oh, there's a lot you know about baseball that I don't know.
That is a lie. Well, let's talk about what happened today. Mariners lose to Kansas City down there in Cactus League play. Apparently, Jerry DePoto's son was pitching for the Royals, and Logan Gilbert got his yitz lit up. 3 2/3, 5 earned and a bomb against KC. I think a lot of us just assume that Logan Gilbert has all the tools. He's on his way without any real big-time bumps in the road. What do you think about this kid now going into year two?
I think you're going to see a better version of him. He admitted to us earlier this week that, there's some things that he's working on. Number one, he needs a put-away pitch. I told him, I think you led the world, and I don't even know how to figure this out, but you led the world in 2-strike foul balls allowed. So he agreed. He's like, that's the one thing I worked on in the offseason. I wanted more late-breaking stuff. He worked with Jacob deGrom, who also went to Stetson like Logan Gilbert did this offseason. So the two of them worked on getting later breaking stuff. And so I'm sure he's trying to work through some of that here in spring. Keep in mind, this is only his second start of the entire friggin' spring because it's so short. So he had a 1-2-3 second. He had a 1-2-3 third. And then probably should have got out before all the damage was done in the fourth, but ends up giving up a double to Dozier and a 3-run homer to Kyle Isbell from Kansas City. So, again, you try not to read too much into spring numbers. They actually are. It's not just a cliche working on a few things, but they're going to need him. I mean, he's got to take that step forward this year because they've yet to add that other arm that we talked about yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so, they're really relying on him to be a consistently good pitcher, the kind of pitcher we saw in September last year.
And that's the part of the team that scares me, Chuck, because I think there's a lot of hope going on. There's hope that Logan Gilbert is good Logan Gilbert. There's hope that Chris Flexen looks like 2021 Chris Flexen. There's hope that Matt Brash or George Kirby can pitch in the major leagues in 2020. Is there a little too much hope going on in this starting rotation?
I don't think so. I mean, Flexen certainly is a concern because analytically the numbers don't suggest he should have had as good a season as he had a year ago. But I think there is still room for that bulldog mentality that wins games, that you can win games with. And so I think you can put him on your list of concerns of I'm not sure he'll be able to repeat it, but I'm not going to count him out either. I think Logan Gilbert absolutely takes the step forward this year. The stuff is absolutely there, and the mentality is the other thing that he's working on. He told us that he talked to Dan Wilson this offseason to try to find out how Randy Johnson became, so vicious in his starts and as a competitor. So I don't think Logan Gilbert, with his soft-spoken personality, could ever be Randy Johnson. But nonetheless, he understands I need to have that edge to me that maybe that I don't exactly exhibit at this point. And then Matt Brash, I mean, he might be the talk of camp. He might be the talk of camp even more so than, I mean, yeah, Julio's there. Julio's the talk of camp. He's the buzz of camp. But Matt Brash is second.
Who is their fifth starter?
And they call it video game stuff that he has. It's crazy, and he looks like a seventh grader with stubble, and yet his tall, lanky kid, and he can absolutely spin it, as Cal Raleigh put it today. Just absolutely spin it. So, there's hope goes into every season, but I think there's some real reason to be very hopeful about this rotation.
Well, Chuck Powell's with us. Steven Souza Jr., Ty France, Sergio Romo, Dave Sims, all on the show today. Chuck, who is their fifth starter going to be, by the way?
I think it's going to be Brash.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then
I think it'll be Matt Brash, and I think they are giddy about making that announcement at this point. And I'm reading between the lines a little bit, but I think that although the hope for George Kirby, he's the higher-rated prospect, I think right now they think Matt Brash can get out major league hitters.
Well, so you've called now in the last 2 days, Julio Rodriguez will be your starting center fielder, and Matt Brash will be in your rotation. So, if you're right, then you're a freaking genius. If not, you'll be an idiot, and we'll just make funny on the air. But, Chuck, let me ask you this.
Trust me, I'm not breaking news. I'm just not that kind of dude. But I am telling you what I'm reading and what I think is going to happen by opening day.
I love it. Hey, how about Ty France? Because we heard the clip there coming in. And look, you're obviously asking a lot in some ways of him to duplicate what he did in 2021. The guy had an 813 OPS and played 152 games. He had never played more than 70 games in a year in his life. And then he goes for 152 and has a great year. Are you confident he can do it again?
I think he's going to be better. I really am. He's just got that rock steady hit to all fields approach. I think the year first full year under his belt, getting to play every day, is only going to benefit him in year number two. They talk about him like he's just a hitting machine. So if we can keep him from, there's no avoiding, and we talked to him about this, getting hit by 27 pitches last year and the abuse that he took to his forearms and his wrists. It was kind of hard to watch. And it hurt him from being more productive last season. I think others might have gone on the disabled list with, some of the pain that he suffered, some of the superficial injuries that he suffered last year. But he muddled through it. But it kind of took away from even larger and more impressive statistics a year ago. There's no changing that approach. If he does, he sacrifices too much as a hitter. So he's going to continue to take bean balls off the forearms, for goodness sake. I do believe that year under his belt, understanding the league a little bit, understanding that, I do belong, I think you're going to see more power out of him. I think you're going to see a better version of him this year.
Chuck, how much pressure is on J.P. Crawford's shoulders? When the GM says he's our guy and we're not even thinking about Trevor Story and Carlos Correa, if I'm J.P. Crawford, I'm like, damn, I better produce for this guy.
Yeah, I guess at first you're like, yes, good, you got my back. And then the next thing you're like, oh, no, why didn't we get Carlos Correa? I've yet to talk to JP, and we will. We always get a chance to talk with him, and he's really fascinating to talk baseball with. He's never going to be that kind of player. He's not going to be a Carlos Correa type. I think that the suggestion was we're good at shortstop. We have a Gold Glove caliber shortstop who just so happens to be the vocal leader of our team, having taken that baton from Kyle Seager here from last year into this year. And so if we have resources, be it financial or trading for a player, then we don't consider shortstop a hole. And so let's find somebody that can fill one of these other holes that, that might help us get there. So the Correa thing, he ends up signing basically a one-year contract with the Minnesota Twins.
Right.
And the read on it is that he's doing that so that next year he starts the market, it doesn't get disrupted, and he can sign his 10-year contract next year That's what he's holding out for. So you might as well be the, what, second highest paid baseball player for this upcoming season and then grow your market. And I don't think the Mariners were interested in that. And so why would you disrupt what the good thing you've got going on with J.P. Crawford to try to add somebody that may just have one foot in the boat?
Well, I mean, you could have signed the guy to a five-year deal, right? I mean, you know, he signs
the... No, that's the point.
Yeah,
that's the point. Like, he started off the market looking for the 10 years, $400 million.
Sure.
And Seager got his, and Semien got his, and then the thing got disrupted, and when he and Story came back to the free agent market, they weren't handing that out, and so Correa's thought was, and this is what I'm hearing, was that, all right, let me just sign a short-term deal with somebody, build my, and then I hit it ground running, we don't get disrupted next year, and next year I get my 10-year deal. That's what I hear. I mean, the five-year thing wasn't even on the table.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
short, really short-term, or it was really long-term.
All right, we got a great show this morning, again, all up on podcast, including an interview with Ty France, Dave Sims, Steven Souza Jr. What do you got in the can for tomorrow? What's on the big menu tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., pal? Because I may get up to hear this live for you.
Scott Servais is going to be on tomorrow. Jared Kelnick is definitely going to be on tomorrow. Anthony Misevich, I believe, is going to be on tomorrow.
There you go.
And then, of course, there's just the beauty of you never know. So I told you guys yesterday that we're going to get them all on. Anybody you want to hear, we're going to have on throughout the course of the week. So we definitely are going to have service tomorrow. We're definitely going to have Kelnick, and then the rest is just sort of kind of roulette. We'll see where the pebble lands.
Ask us service about losing Devontae Adams to the Raiders. He's a huge Packer fan, by the way. I'd love to get his thoughts on that. Yeah. Is he more
Is he more
pissed off?
Him.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I overheard him talking about his NCAA tournament bracket that he filled out, and he didn't even take Wisconsin. He took Purdue to win it all. So I don't know how loyal he is to the Cheese State.
Unbelievable. All right, man. Yeah. Great stuff. Enjoy tomorrow morning. We'll be listening. All right, dude. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right.
See
you guys.
Chuck Powell with us. We'll get a break. Brian Schmetzer is going to join us coming up at 6 o'clock. If you missed our conversation with Sam Perkins, you'll hear it coming up at 6:30 tonight. Great to have Big Smooth back on the radio show. And did the Seahawks maybe just kind of show their cards a bit on DK Metcalf? I don't know. They may have. We'll chat about it next on Softy and Dick on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
We're changing the way you listen. Switch the stream from 950 KJR to the 93.3 stream on the iHeartRadio app. Now, back to Softy and Dick.
Hey, Sam Perkins was with us a couple hours ago and told a story about what it was like to party on Bourbon Street after they beat Georgetown 40 years ago tonight. I mean, Michael Jordan, James Worthy, Sam Perkins all running around Bourbon Street after knocking off Georgetown and Patrick Ewing to win the national title. You can't get more boss than that.
No.
Okay, on Bourbon Street. Like, it's one thing to do it in, like, Philadelphia or Arizona or L.A., but you're on Bourbon Street, the party capital outside of Vegas, the party capital of America.
And one of the last times in Michael Jordan's life that he was able to walk around anywhere and not...
Yeah,
everybody recognized
it. Yeah, a lot, but not like now, for sure. No doubt about that. So Sam Perkins was with us. We're going to give it to you again coming up at 6:30 tonight on the radio show. Did you see John Schneider met with the media at the NFL owners' meetings today?
I saw he did, but I did not hear what he said.
So we don't have, I'm not sure if there's any audio available. He was asked about Bobby Wagner and him maybe coming back, and he said, nope, we're on to Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton.
Shut the door.
So the Bobby Wagner era is officially over. He says that Drew Locke can be more than just a game manager. Okay, so we'll see.
Okay.
He said they feared losing Will Disley, and they also said that their intent is to extend DK Metcalf. Does that sound familiar?
That's commonplace for us to have conversations with teams about all of the players, particularly marquee players, and that's not changed. So it's the same as it's been. We have no intention of making any move there, but the conversations, John has to feel those, he always has.
The I word has reared its ugly head again.
Yes.
Wow, how about that? We have no intention of trading Russell. Our intent is to trade DK or to extend DK Metcalf. So, I mean, look, I mean, the obvious difference is that one guy was pissed off and miserable and wanted out of here. And the other guy, I don't think, thinks like that yet. Maybe he does. I don't believe that's the case. We haven't seen anything.
Well, he's been pissed a couple times.
Right, but we haven't seen anything that leads us to believe that he's, you know, going down that road. He's been angry about not getting the ball and all that, but who was he angry? He was angry at the guy that now plays for Denver.
That's right.
Who knows? And wasn't he one of the first guys to embrace Drew Lock on social media, DK Metcalf?
Yes.
When he came here? So if we're painting a pretty picture here, I don't know. I mean, I guess if we believe Pete Carroll, which is, excuse me, while I laugh my ass off, you know, he's going to approach this the same way they approach Russell Wilson. If the phone rings and somebody's asking about DK, they'll answer it. And they'll talk about it.
Tyreek Hill got what?
270?
No, but I mean a trade.
Right.
Two firsts?
I believe so, yes. Yes.
I mean, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you trade DK for the haul that they got for Tyreek Hill? And not having to pay him $25 million a year for 4 years?
Let me look up what he got exactly. Let's see. Tyreek Hill was traded for, he went to the Dolphins, and he got a 2022 first rounder, a second rounder, and a fourth, plus a fourth and a sixth and 23.
So
one first rounder, one second rounder, two fourths, and a sixth rounder. So would I trade DK Metcalf for a first, 2 seconds, a fourth, two fourths, and a sixth round pick?
I would have done it yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I would like to see what DK Metcalf looks like when they actually force feed him the football.
But here's the problem.
And it drove me nuts when Russell Wilson didn't do that. I thought Russell Wilson was just as much to blame for the lack of targets to DK Metcalf than Brian Schottenheimer or Shane Waldron was.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You got to throw the ball to guys even if they're covered. And Russell Wilson didn't do that. So maybe Drew Lock, Russell's security blanket was 16.
Yep.
Maybe Drew Lock's security blanket will be DK Metcalf.
Right. Well, he likes throwing picks, so it's, you know, should be no problem forcing the ball to DK Metcalf.
He likes to force the ball.
Picked off, and so what? I mean, he's been doing that his whole life. But I'm very curious to see how they use him this year and what happens, because I don't think that there's anybody one-on-one, especially on the line of scrimmage, that can cover DK Metcalf in the NFL. He's 6'5", 230. No corner on his own can cover DK Metcalf. When you throw a jump ball or a sideline pattern to DK, or you get him the ball on a quick, you know, whatever, have him break a tackle, he's going to catch the ball every time.
Well, there's,
and if he doesn't catch it, it's because he drops it.
There's right? not nearly enough times where DK Metcalf would just line up and run a 4-yard slant and then get the ball. I can literally remember one time, because I remember sitting there with my son going, look at DK. A 5-yard slant is wide open here. And they actually, for once, ran a 5-yard slant. It may have been in the last game of the season against Arizona.
Yeah.
And I was like, my God, why haven't they done that 30 times this year?
Well, if there's a corner playing off the ball, if they're playing off the line of scrimmage and DK Metcalf is standing there, 10 times out of 9, get the guy the ball. Every single freaking time, until the defense does something different. And again, that drove me crazy that Russell Wilson would not do that. All right, we're going to break. Brian Schmetzer is going to join us coming up next segment. We announced our inaugural 9 members of the initial Softy and Dick POS editorial board. Okay, we're going to get to those names in case you haven't heard them. Yes.
Stupidity.
We're very proud of these people. We'll do that and talk to Brian Schmetzer next on a busy Tuesday on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
Now, from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your Sports Radio KJR 950 AM and 93.3 FM Sports Headlines.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. Headlines on a gorgeous Tuesday night right here on Softy and Dick, are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
No one likes a big pull more than Softy.
You're looking for tickets for the Mariners opener in a couple of weeks against the Astros. VenueKings.com can get you in the door for $24 right now at T-Mobile Park on opening night. Be sure and use code Softy at checkout for a little bit of a discount. Well, what do we got? News in the NFL. The Saints are signing Andy Dalton to a contract. The Ravens have extended head coach John Harbaugh for 3 more years. And the NFL has decided to change the overtime rules, but only for the playoffs. Each team now guaranteed at least one possession in overtime. If the game is tied after both teams have the ball, it goes to sudden death.
Game of the night in the NBA in the fourth quarter, Sixers 98, Bucks 97 with that. The Bucks just scored, and they are up on Shockey's unbreakable Unstoppable Sixers, you know, 99-98.
You know that, right? He's going to literally come in here and snap your neck.
Oh, Lord, Shockey.
He's going to remove your head from your shoulders, man.
Giannis, all he's done is a 34-12-6 through the first three quarters of
play. Yeah, he's pretty good. Big game in the NBA, even bigger if you took the Bucks on the points, by the way. Nova and Kansas, game one of the Final Four on Saturday at 3:09. And the North Carolina Duke set for 5:49. Hear both games right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
Pete Carroll said today the Hawks are still trying to sign left tackle Dwayne Brown as well as tackle Brandon Schell. Geno Smith is in negotiations, and John Schneider, you heard him last segment saying, we're done with Bobby Wagner.
They're moving on. We're done with him. He will not be invited to any alumni functions either. The hell with him.
That's not true.
He didn't say that. I'm kidding. Mariners complete the Suarez-Winker deal by including pitcher Connor Phillips. He is the 15th rated prospect in the M's organization. He becomes now the player to be named later in that deal. All right, Sounders and Minnesota, don't you know? Coming up on Saturday. What time is pregame, Jackson?
4:30 on the iHeartRadio app.
4:30 on the iHeartRadio app on Saturday. We got the Final Four coming up on Saturday, but I know our next guest is fired up to head to Minneapolis, Minnesota to take on Minnesota FC. It's our pal Brian Schmetzer. How are you, man? What's going on?
I'm doing great. I'm doing really good. Softy, how are you?
We're good. Have you been watching much of the U.S. men's national team just romp through this tournament, man? Apparently they got Costa Rica tomorrow, and as long as they don't get destroyed, they're in the World Cup. How do you feel?
Well, I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good. Jordan got a couple sub-appearances, so that's good that we have a little representation. You know, they certainly had a good performance last time out and took some of the pressure. Look, there was some pressure there, Softy. I mean, we didn't make it last go around, and, you know, it's like the sky was falling. You know, all us soccer guys were going crazy. Ask Jackson how he felt after U.S. failed to qualify last go around. And so there was some subtle pressure there, but that win the other night was a good win and puts him in a great spot.
You mentioned Morris got some run. How much run do you actually want him to get? How much run do you want Roldan to get? Because you still want him to play at the end of the week for you guys.
Well, we've got two tricky games coming up. First game in Minnesota, don't you know? And then the game against New York City FC. So, yeah, we don't know what condition they're going to come back in, Dick. I mean, it would be good for them to play because I want them to go to the World Cup. I think that'd be great. But yeah, we gotta watch him. We gotta, you know, knew who was with Cameroon today. Javi's coming back from Ecuador, so
yep.
We've got some logistics to work through.
I love that you quote this show, by the way.
You're such a super lady.
It makes me so happy to hear you say things like that. But Brian Schmetzer with us. You mentioned knew who, and he's in the World Cup with Cameroon. I mean, talk to me about how big that is for him, and what do you think that means for his country and for a member of your team.
All I can say, Softy, is even if you're not a soccer fan, you should just watch the highlights. I don't know if they'll show everything, but after practice, we were watching a game. You know, Algeria came in; they were ahead 1-0 in aggregate. They had won the first game in Cameroon 1-0. They were in the driver's seat, and then Cameroon gets a goal back, so it's tied on aggregate. Then Algeria scores a goal, but it's called back from VAR. Fans are throwing chairs. You know, they're breaking the stadium. They're throwing chairs.
Wow.
You know, Algeria scores in, like, overtime. They think they've won it. Literally with 30 seconds on the clock, somehow Cameroon scores another goal. I mean, just the raw emotion of the people, you know, from Algeria and Cameroon in that stadium and the players, the coaches. I mean, it was an exciting game.
Is this a year Team USA can get to the knockout round, or are they still another World Cup away from that?
You know, another great question, Dick. I mean, look, we've got a really talented young team. So all of those guys, Pulisic and some of those guys, are in their early 20s. You've got some teenagers that are doing pretty good, for God's sakes. So, you know, if it's not this cycle,
yeah,
then, you know, next cycle they'll be all in their mid-20s in their primes. And you know, I wouldn't count them out, Dick. I think Greg Berhalter has done a great job coaching this squad. And, you know, look, it's sports. Italy's not in the World Cup. I mean, one of the perennial favorites. 2 years in a row, they haven't even qualified. So, you know, we can go far in this tournament.
Do you think we'll ever see them win a World Cup in our lifetime? U.S.?
I hope 2026. I mean, that would be pretty cool if the World Cup comes here and all that. I mean, it'd be awesome. Yeah, why not? Why not dream big?
God, you sound like Russell Wilson. Why not us? Why not us? Right, Coach?
Oh, my God. You're comparing me to Russell. Okay, I'll take that as a compliment.
Hey, listen. Is he still your boss, technically? Is he giving up a piece of the Sounders pie, or does he keep that?
I'm sure he's going to keep it. I don't think he's going to start cheering for the Rapids. I don't know.
Yeah, he actually had a Go Rapids on his Twitter account. Did you not see that yesterday?
No, I did not see that, but I'll take a check. I'll look.
Yeah, I'm actually lying. That never happened. Brian Schmetzer is with us on the air. Hey, talk to us about Minnesota. Always a tough place to play. What do you make of these guys that you'll see on Saturday?
Yeah, the field actually is not in great condition because it's been snowing in there, of course. It's Minnesota. You know, it's a tough place to play. They've got a good home record. They sing Wonderwall after they win games. That's kind of weird, but, you know, that's me. But it'll be hard. It'll be a hard game. But, look, we got to balance that league schedule with, again, the CONCACAF Champions League game on Wednesday. So we'll put out a good team. I mean, good news on the injury front. Nico's back. Madranda's back. So we're getting some guys back, and that'll help.
Well, you got a lot of these teams in cold weather cities, and the MLS just continues to move the start of the season back and back and back towards January. So, I mean, do you like coaching basically in the winter time?
Well, ask some of the teams from Southern California or Florida if they like coming to Seattle in November when it's pouring down rain and it's 39 degrees and they're playing on turf. I mean, we get that advantage as well. So I kind of like it. I mean, it's just part of the deal. It's part of MLS. But you are correct. They're trying to, you know, squeeze a bunch of games in a calendar year. And, you know, it's just one of the things we got to deal with.
Well, Brian Schmetzer is with us. Sounders in Minnesota, don't you know, on Saturday. You said 4:30 pregame, is that right, Jackson?
Yes.
On the iHeartRadio app, so check that out. And there's just a bunch of guys that are out for international duty. Are you concerned that you may not get all of them back for Saturday?
We'll get them back, Softy, but the trick is when they're flying, well, maybe not. Maybe, I mean, they might miss a connection or, you know, you never know. They're coming from different parts in the world. But just their physical condition. So our sports science guys try and reach out to the respective national teams to kind of get a feel for what they've done when they're out of our hands. And then I'll try and make good decisions. You know, it's a long flight and, you know, they may be at injury risk, might not. You know, maybe they play 45 minutes and, you know, we save them for Wednesday. Those will be decisions once we actually, you know, get them into Minnesota and we take a look at them.
Well, and you got some very important guys still coming off of injuries. So give us the update on Rui Diaz and Ladero and Yaimar.
Yeah, Yaimar, not so good, but Raul and Nico, they're fully healthy. Like I said, they're ready to go. They were in full training today. They look good. They look very good.
Brian Schmetzer, listen, man, awesome stuff. And I know you're going to hear this a lot on Saturday, hopefully not too much in Minneapolis, so may as well get used to it right now. You mentioned Wonderwall. When you hear this song, do you want to just puke?
It's at the end of the game, Softy.
Yeah.
That's only if they win.
Yeah. So
when we win, they won't be playing it.
Okay, so let's hear it now and not hear it Saturday. How's that sound?
That's good for me.
All right, you're the man. Good luck on Saturday, Coach. We'll talk
in a week.
Thanks,
Coach. Good luck.
All right.
Take care. See you, Dick.
You bet. Brian Schmetzer with us on the radio show. Always fun to have him
Wonderwall,
on.
Wonderwall, huh?
Yeah, by Oasis. You're not a big Oasis guy? You've heard this song.
Oh,
Jackson,
crank
turn
it
this
up.
Yeah, you've heard this song. I know you have. Go ahead. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I know that song. I know this song.
This has been around for a long time.
I had never heard of Wonderwall, though.
Well,
Oasis.
How many times have they heard this song played in Minneapolis?
The Sounders?
Yes.
Once.
Last year, right?
Last year. Yeah. The game that Jackson said the Sounders would lose after winning a ton in a row.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I was right.
Well, what do you think about this weekend?
I think that they're going to get a draw. I think they're going to be able to get enough players back. I wish I could have heard the injury updates there from Brian.
Yeah, you know what you can do? Go back and listen to it and have your little Twitter account later.
Podcast is free because...
My God, this kid over here.
Why would anybody pay for
unbelievable. I mean, he's literally producing a radio show and he's having a freak out about Cameroon in the World Cup during the show. I saw what you were doing. You were tweeting about Nuhu and Cameroon.
We were at a five-minute commercial break.
No. This was during the show you were doing this, okay?
Priorities, Jackson.
Yes. Don't act like I got I got one eye on you, pal.
Okay.
All right, just because you're a homeowner, I mean, you goof around now.
I'll
okay,
goof around whenever I want to goof around.
Anyway, well, so listen, Sam Perkins was with us. He'll be joining us coming up at 6:30. If you missed it on the replay, he was great. He shared a story about what it was like to party on Bourbon Street the night after North Carolina beat Georgetown in the national championship game. I want to ask him about the rivalry with Duke, because you remember, Dick, when Sam Perkins was in North Carolina, Duke hadn't become Duke yet.
Right.
Now, they were 8 miles away, obviously. They're very close, but this is a much nastier thing, I would assume, than it was 40 years ago. Or was it? We'll find out at 6:30.
Yeah, well, Duke had some pretty good teams prior to Krzyzewski, but obviously didn't take that next step, and they were always just the little brother to North Carolina, and North Carolina was the guy. But it's great to have Sam coming on, and Sam is also donating a lot of money to SAA, which is a local group of high schoolers that for the last 15 years, our friend Randy Novak, our mutual friend Randy Novak, has taken groups of high school students, over thousands now, 4,200 students and adults have gone to New Orleans to help rebuild homes that were devastated in Hurricane Katrina. And that continues, because you and I have been down there and you know that the houses are not all rebuilt, not even close, from a tragedy that happened 17 years ago. So you can help, because he's putting together a matching gift of $10,000, and you go to saabuilds.org and help another family move back into their home, and you can help Sam Perkins out. So saabuilds.org, just, you know, a few bucks helps, no question about it.
Very cool. Well, I have offered a matching $10,000 donation from you, by the way.
Oh, that's so nice of you. Yeah, so that's nice of you. I'm going to have to ask the wife on that one.
No Christmas gifts for the kids for the next 5 years, minimum, maybe even longer than that.
Yeah,
well, Sam's coming up. The other big news of the day that we haven't talked much about today, I think we should discuss it, is the change to the overtime rules in the NFL. And I mean, look, my initial reaction to it is, well, this is just dumb. I mean, why not do it for every game like this? You know, why not just, because you're going to have a game in week 18 that's for seeding, or a team that decides who makes the playoffs and who goes home, who wins the division championship, and it's going to happen just like it happened in the conference championship where, I don't know, I mean, maybe Joe Burrow's playing Lamar Jackson, or Mahomes is playing Russell Wilson, and the game goes to overtime, and Mahomes scores, and Russell never touches the ball, and Bronco fans are going to be pissed. And I would love to see that happen, by the way, because that means a better draft pick for the Seahawks. But it's a step in the right direction. What they're going to do is each team is now guaranteed at least one possession. If the game is tied after the first possession, then the next team to score wins the game, right? Sudden death, okay? Obviously. So I like it. I just wish they would do it for every game in the regular season.
I would assume that the rules committee asked the analytics experts and said, okay, what has happened in the playoffs and what has happened in the regular season? And what has happened in the playoffs is overwhelmingly the team that gets the kickoff wins the game. 10-2 in the last decade, including 7 times where the defense never got it. Now, what the data says in the regular season is it's barely over 50-50 if you get the kickoff. And what the data says is teams overwhelmingly lose the next week if they go to overtime the week prior. So I think for a competition standpoint, I think the NFL is trying to shorten these games because they don't want teams playing an extra 7, 8, 9, potentially 10 minutes and then having to play another 7 days later.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get why they're doing it, because they don't want guys playing 6 quarters of football.
That's right.
I totally understand it. I just think that as the season goes on, and if you want to do this thing where you allow half the league to make the playoffs, then games become even bigger. More games become bigger. More games become impactful as the year goes on. Games that wouldn't have mattered in week 18 now could matter for playoff seeding. And I'm just very curious to see how this, Dick, plays out if we have the same type of scenario that we had with the Bills and Chiefs playing out in week 18 of the regular season for a one seed or a playoff spot, and somebody doesn't get their turn and they get pissed off and the rule changes the next week in the postseason.
Correct if I'm wrong, didn't the Raiders Chargers winner take all game go to overtime in the last week of the season? Did that go to overtime, or was that just a super close game that went down to the wire? I'm trying to remember. I will look it up.
The Raiders Chargers, was that not the... Yes, it did. I believe it did go to overtime, because we were sitting there watching the game.
Yes, 35-32 overtime.
They both would have made it. Remember
that's
that?
Right.
We were all sitting around
so
on Twitter.
So yeah. There's your example right there.
Totally.
35-32
exactly.
In week 18, yes. Winner to the playoffs, loser out.
Yes, and if it plays out like that, then, you know, somebody's like, really? We're going to change the rules next week? I mean, it's crazy. And I look, I get it within reason. I get that the NHL, the MLS, for example, a lot of leagues may have different rules in the regular season versus the playoffs. Well, you know, look, one of the reasons why you can do it is because, you know, you can stomach ties in the regular. You can't stomach ties in the playoffs because you have to have a winner. Somebody has to advance.
A lot of Americans can't stomach ties
exactly.
In the regular season either.
But I think with this rule, the more teams that are involved in the playoff run, the more teams you're going to have that potentially could be in the mix for it, and the more teams that could get pissed off if things don't go their way in an overtime game. And this is absolutely a direct result of what happened against Kansas City and Buffalo. I mean, if that game doesn't happen like that, guys, in the AFC Championship, we're not sitting here having this conversation.
I think it
no
would,
way.
You know what would be interesting is – let's say that Raiders game, now how it ended, for those that don't remember, is the Raiders got the ball first in overtime and did nothing with it, and then the Chargers got the ball, and then the Raiders kicked the field goal. Now, what would have happened had, in overtime, the Raiders won the toss, marched down the field, and scored? Would that have been enough for them to say, no, this has got to change in the regular season as well? It's
I don't think so. I think the AFC Championship with two players, Mahomes and Allen, I think that cocktail... Don't you think? Because of the magnitude of the game and the two players involved. I mean, you could argue the two best players in the NFL, in Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes, in the AFC Championship, the second biggest game the NFL has to offer. So all of that combined with each other, I think, was enough to get the NFL off their ass. You said something interesting that I might bring up later in a week, and I feel kind of bad doing this because you're off for the next week and a half, and Millen's filling in tomorrow, and I know exactly what Millen's going to say if I bring this up on the show tomorrow. He's going to freak out, and
about
his
DK?
Eyeballs will start bleeding.
Yeah.
I want to ask Millen tomorrow if he would make that deal for DK Metcalf that the Dolphins made for Tyreek Hill, because you said you would do it. A first, 2 seconds, a fourth, and a sixth rounder.
And not
for DK
and
Metcalf.
Not having to give DK Metcalf $25 million a year for
and
5 years.
So if somebody called you tonight... Let's say a team in the AFC. I don't know. The Jets. Whatever.
Yes.
Okay? And they offered that deal. You're saying yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, and the reason, I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's a pretty simple reason. I mean, if you look at how much players impact games. Let's just look at Vegas Lions, for example, right? Quarterbacks, good quarterbacks, impact the line by 7 points. Aaron Rodgers, I think, impacted the line one time by 12 points when he went out of the game for our good friend Brett. What was his name?
Brett Hundley.
Hundley.
Yeah.
Brett Hundley. The game switched 12 points when it went from Aaron Rodgers to Brett Hundley. Wide receivers, Vegas will tell you, not even a point. Even the best wide receivers, not even a point. And I'm going to get 5 draft picks, including a first and a second, for a guy that doesn't really... I mean, he impacts a game, yes, but not nearly the way the quarterback
I think he impacts a game if you're good. If you're not good, then there's no use.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not going to be a good team and you're going to struggle at quarterback for the next year or 2 years...
Which you are.
Then maybe it's the time and the place to talk about a deal. So, Millen will join us tomorrow, and we'll ask him on the air, but I kind of know what he's going to say.
Oh, yeah, he'll kill me.
All right, Sam Perkins is going to join us coming up next segment. 40 years ago tonight, North Carolina beat Georgetown in New Orleans in the NCAA championship. He'll tell a story next about partying on Bourbon Street after that game that he claims... has never been heard before by human ears. That's Sam Perkins coming next on 93.3 KJR.